views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
When the snap happened, John Wick's dog disappeared, and that's why Thanos is fucked. You make him, like, I don't know, was in the military with Hawkeye or something back in the day. You know?
Yes.
And you just make it, like, that's his backstory, and then naturally leads in. To the point where I was actually watching John Wick 2 the other day, and when they're in the museum, he passes by a sign in there saying insights into the Soul Stone or something like that, and it's about some, like, Indian relic thing, but I'm like, oh!
Crossover!
Let's get this happening. I would love to see John Wick in space just fighting Thanos.
Or just put John Wick in the solo standalone Black Widow movie. Can we get that? Where they, like, did a mission, like, seriously. That would perfectly fit. Younger days of Black Widow, where she's the bloodlust killer. Like, yeah. Oh. Russian? Hey, Russian?
Eh. Even if they're doing a Black Widow prequel, the whole impossible task had to do with him going up against Black Widow. Boom.
Yeah.
You're done.
I mean, because she got trained by Russians. He was trained by Russians.
Yeah,
all makes sense.
But he would have killed her ass.
That is true. Oh, that's true. He would have murdered the fuck out of her. I mean, no one in the Marvel Universe is as bad as John Wick. Man, he's fucking... What was the Russian name for Boogeyman?
Boba Yaga.
Boba Yaga.
Baba Yaga. Yeah. Yeah.
And that would be his superhero name. I mean, he's already got a alias.
He sure does.
That's who you send to kill the Boogeyman. Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Oh, my
God. Yeah.
God damn it.
So, yeah, what we are talking about this evening is not necessarily John Wick in the Marvel universe, but the universe that was built around this original character. This was not based on a novel. This was its own original property that feels the world building in this series is so rich that it feels like it's something that came out of a novel, because there's so much backstory. There's so much built out surrounding this, what could have been a very simple Hitman movie. And there's an entire culture built around it, which is fantastic. It gives it so much more depth and dimension.
That's why it works so goddamn well.
Yeah.
Is because it is full and rich. And, you know, you have this whole, like, weird-ass secret society of assassins, and there are places they could go for sanctuary, and they have a currency of their own. It's fucking amazing.
It is.
But see, and I agree, and that's what... That's what gives this legs. It's why it hasn't gotten stale. We're three episodes in, and they've got so much more that they can do, and they've got so much room to play, because they've done such a wonderful job of building this world and building this this mythos around all of them. That these really could have been throwaway movies. They could have been very simple. You know, we're just gonna do a Hitman movie, and it wasn't. You know, it's a whole world that we get to play in now. You know.
No, exactly. And I mean, once you're in the world and you see everything that's broken down, with that there is a code and that there's rules, and you realize that, of course, there's more than, like, one hitman. So, like, they can't... otherwise, without this, you'd have a world of hitmen killing hitman to get out of the way. So, when you see that, you're like, this makes total fucking sense. Of course it's going to be a structure. Like, there's going to be a code. There's going to be something you have to follow.
I don't know, after seeing the most recent one, I think maybe it is just hitmen killing hitmen, because it seems to me that the entirety of the world is actually built out of hitmen.
Everybody, like, literally everyone.
Every single person in the movie was actually an assassin of some kind.
I will say, before we move any further along, that there will be heavy spoilers for all the John Wick movies. So not just one and two, but three that just recently came out, Parabellum. We're going to be talking at length about that film as well. So if you haven't seen John Wick 3 and you're worried about spoilers, go check that out first before listening to the rest of this episode. Or if you don't care about spoilers, I mean, enjoy. We're going to be talking about the first two as well. So should be a lot of fun. And yeah, welcome to this episode of Geeks Under the Influence on all things John Wick.
You call me by day and by night, and I'm already sick. I'm sick of you and the stupid song of you. That's why I hired a man to take care of you. About this jerk, yes he shot, yes he shot. He shot me instead, singing it. I never even enough for him. Don't believe in me.
Yay!
I don't know how I feel about what I just was exposed to. Kudos for people making music.
So I love the looks that I'm getting from the my fellow panelists right now over that.
So what was that exactly?
I was looking for something that it referenced dogs or Hitman's or something along those lines. This is called the Hitman's Love Song by the Freak Fandango Orchestra. And they're very kind of like Russian gypsy kind of tone, which also fits with a lot of the backstory of John Wick. Yes, so,
which we definitely found out in the most recent film.
Yeah, absolutely.
They did hint at it a lot in the first one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They did a little
bit. They did, but they really got like...
Oh, well, yeah, you saw where
you
grew up.
Come on.
So yeah, check out, there will be a link to their music if you enjoyed that very Gogo Bordello-esque kind of approach to our intro song this episode. Yeah, so let's talk about the panel before we get into John Wick. We got a lot to cover, so let's get through this. Returning after a while not being on GUI, very happy to have Edward here with us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back, and really excited to be talking about John Wick. I think the last time I was here, we were talking about Keanu Reeves.
I think so actually, yeah.
I'm happy to be back and here on GUI.
That was pre-episode 100, I believe, was the Keanu Reeves episode. So if you haven't listened to that one and you enjoy Keanu Reeves movies, definitely check it out. That was a really fun episode.
That was.
So to Edward, one of the co-hosts of Beautiful Disasters, you can hear him, will also be my guest on Smack My Pitch Up, where we talk about the movie Big.
Yes.
That was a really fun episode.
Dude, that shit was hilarious.
Yeah, and also there's an episode with me on it coming soon on Beautiful Disasters where we watched FDR American Badass.
Hell
speaking
yeah.
of absurd gunfights, although this one involves Nazi werewolves and and fascist werewolves. And,
well, yeah, yeah, of all three varieties.
Yes. World War II werewolves, the axis of werewolf
evil. The axis of evil werewolves.
Yes, absolutely. We got Herr Grootz here.
Yes, indeed, man. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you on. This is definitely a series that I know is beloved by you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It has all the elements that you appreciate. Just fantastic, ridiculous gunfights, car chases, everything.
Some of the best action made in American cinema in decades.
Absolutely. Next up on the panel is my right-hand man on my left, the sexual chocolate, the man that gives the sexual nature of this podcast. He's 90% of it. Is Mr. Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's up, guys?
Sexy motherfucker.
Now you're just making me uncomfortable.
Well, I love that you open with that little like kind of like soft berry white sort of.
How you all
thing.
Doing it's out like, there?
Yeah,
it's like yeah, what's no up, problem. Guys?
Yeah, I got this. I'm trying to be Common from John Wick 2.
He's unnecessarily good for an actor that started as a rapper.
No shit, man. Like
he shouldn't
I mean,
be
he,
that
he
good
was
an
a
actor.
Smoking Aces, he killed
yep.
it in that.
Yep.
Like,
oh yeah,
right. Yep. Oh yeah.
Him and Mos Def are like
that those movie
are
too. Those
are
the, are two
the rappers that,
come,
that
yeah.
I'm like, oh, you're actually a legitimately good actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Smoking Aces was so much fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fun to cross over with John Wick. I mean,
he would just kill them all though. Like, I'm sorry, yeah, there'd be no like.
Yep.
There'd be no like
it's
who's
true.
Gonna win. No, John Wick's gonna win him. He's
well,
gonna win.
It's
time.
True.
And that's actually kind of funny because John Wick is almost Superman, right?
Almost.
He's almost in these movies, he's so badass that it would be easy for you to end up with him being too powerful, with it being boring because you know he's just gonna kill him. Mm-hmm. You know, and they walk that line really, really well by mm-hmm. making him like super, super badass, but not so badass that it's like, this is boring. He's just going to kill this guy now. You
like,
know?
He gets fucked up in all the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like with recording, you know, everyone looks at the man on my right, the Hobbit, is the, you know, the Superman of you know, podcasts, but, you know, he does get his
no
ass
one,
handed to him.
No one looks at me that way.
You do. You look at yourself in the mirror like that, okay?
Yeah, that's how I get myself ready in the morning. It's like, you're motherfucking podcast Superman. Look at you.
So, but he does get his ass kicked on a regular basis. So, to my right, the myth, the non-ass kicker.
Yes.
Mike
yes.
the Hobbit Bickett.
Yes, I leap tall dad jokes in a single bound.
Not including that one.
No.
That was bad.
I am Mike the Hobbit, the founder of the Geeks Under the Influence Network, your host for GUI Trivia. And you can see this show, my other show, Smack My Pitch Up, my other show, Booze Clues, and also Beautiful Disasters and Geek Father. And is that all of them? But you can find a lot of our shows at GalaxyCon May 31st through June 2nd at the Richmond Convention Center. We've got the dates available. Look for our event page on Facebook. to get the information on where and when those panels are going to be happening. It's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely come out. And then that Sunday, after you check out the Adventures in Podcasting, the Podcasting 101 panel that I'll be on, drop on over to the Hofheimer building in the dark room for another live recording of Booze Clues. We're doing our third episode. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. I've really enjoyed doing these live gigs, so come and check us out. And now on to John Wick. Did a little bit of that housekeeping to get it out of the way right in the front. So, John Wick, I did not see the first John Wick in theaters.
I didn't either.
Saw it as just going to be another shoot 'em up, dumbass shoot 'em up movie. And Keanu had kind of fallen off a little bit at that point. He not completely, but he was doing.
He was building motorcycles more than he was doing. More than he was doing acting.
That's true, and he had kind of lost some of his huge star power.
Yeah.
But, he was doing smaller movies.
Movies like Knock Knock.
And he was getting older, but he didn't look like he was getting older.
No.
Which is good for him, I guess. The first John Wick kind of hit out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a freaking, action revelation. It was so much better than what we've been having from Hollywood for years.
Absolutely.
You know, Hollywood's been delivering, Fast and Furious movies and over the top, ridiculous stuff, which is fine. Genre movies, fine. But this delivered a straight up revenge, somewhat realistic,
absolutely.
Sort of scenario.
Well, more so than a lot of these types of
more
movies.
More so than a lot, yeah.
More than fucking Jason Bourne, that's for sure.
I mean, the action choreography was outstanding, but we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, I think, with Keanu Reeves at that point in his career, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when he did The Matrix, that was for him to come out as this giant action star and fighting and doing all that in The Matrix was so kind of out of left field from him. I mean, the action that you'd seen from him was, Speed.
Point Break.
Those kinds of things where he did an action-y kind of movie, but to see him really physically fighting and doing all that like he did in The Matrix. And then The Matrix, I mean, in my opinion, at least, they kind of fell off,
Oh, yeah,
I agree.
And I'm not, trying to stick, force anybody into that corner, but I think, they weren't as good as the first one. They, they kind of went downhill. And to my mind, it was okay, well, he's done being an action star now. And then when this came out, it exceeded all kinds of expectations.
There's a reason I don't own the two sequels to The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Because they're unnecessary.
And he did try to get back into action. Remember that movie? Was it 47 Ronin? Whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I want to blame him or the writers, because I think he did probably the best he could with what he was given. I feel like, because seeing him now, we know he can do that kind of role. We know he can do it. It was just not good.
Mm-mm.
So he tried. He kind of got back into that for one movie, and then it bombed all to hell. But
that was the biggest box office bong for that year. I think it was 2013. Yeah, I think when that came out.
Something
terrible. Like that.
Yeah. They did not do well. But unlike we talked about The Matrix and that series going downhill, I might not like the sequels as much as the first one, but saying that, I love all three John Wick movies. I will watch all three John Wick movies. I just have my preferred one. The Matrix, first one, and I'm done. I'm literally done. I don't want to waste another 5 hours of my life watching the sequels.
Yeah. John Wick, I don't have the numbers available to me, but this is finally the first movie since Endgame came out to actually topple Endgame in the box office. So it took a month for another movie to get number one in the box office, and it squeaked by and got it out from under Endgame, finally.
Has Endgame beat Avatar yet, please?
It's close. Jesus it's within, Christ. I think it's within 100 million now of being it, so I'm pretty sure it will.
Oh, it will.
Oh, yeah, it will.
Because it's got probably at least another month in the theaters before they drop it. I mean, people keep going back to see it, so. Yeah.
Something needs to beat Avatar. I'm sorry, the movie's not worthy of being number one. Just my opinion.
No. No, I think especially Disney wants that. Wants that biggest movie of all time thing. They'll keep it in the theaters basically until
Avatar. They still have number one. They are number one right now. Disney owns Avatar.
No, but Avatar is how many years old? They want a new contender.
True.
Disney owns Avatar now?
Yes. Yeah, because that was Fox property. When they purchased Fox, they got Avatar.
So they're releasing three more Star Wars movies after this final one, the final Skywalker saga one, and then they are releasing the Avatar sequels in between the Star Wars movies. They're going to own Christmas for like 7 years.
Yeah. And probably longer than that.
Yeah. And then there's also the Marvel movies. They own the summer. And they need something to release in February, and then they're good.
Like, well, I mean, March, February, something around there. Like, Captain Marvel came out in March. Black Panther came out in February last
That's
year.
True.
I mean, they own the box office. Now, what studio owns John Wick?
I'm not entirely sure.
I looked it up today. I really did. I looked it up today, and it was I was doing a little bit of research before this, and I found out that the guy that wrote the original screenplay for John Wick sold it to...
Thunder Road, I think it
Thunder
was.
Thunder Road, that's what it is. You're right.
Yeah, they have the roller coaster thing.
Sold it to Thunder Road, and they bought it, and it was just going to be a straightforward revenge, and it was actually called Scorned.
Scorned, yeah.
I think was the name of the film originally. It was the name of the screenplay. It was going to be called Scorned.
And it was going to be an older gentleman,
yeah,
an older retired
assassin who's like been a horrible, horrible person, and then it's like kind of a redemption film for him to find redemption.
Okay.
And they, after they bought it and Keanu Reeves got attached to it, that same guy who did the original screenwriting went back and rewrote it with Keanu Reeves' input. And that's how we ended up with the first John Wick film. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
That it was able to be, like you were saying before, not a book, not a comic book, not a previous world, that this him and Keanu Reeves kind of sat down and hashed out how this universe was going to work, you know. And I think that's awesome.
And some of the little tweaks to what I would consider our world that makes it feel so much more full is like the blood packed coin thing that they, you know, mm-hmm. you basically, that's money is a different animal in this community where the coins are actually more of almost a business card. It's just a show of respect to someone.
Yep.
When you that's what you exchange instead of money. And you know, the making a pact with somebody, if you need somebody to help you with an impossible task, they will, but then you owe them basically whatever they want when they cash in.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have had John Wick 2 without that. I mean, that it shows how, like, by doing that also, you're honoring a bond, a commitment you made, but at the same time, doesn't matter if it's for a good or a bad task, it's something you've got to do, which led to, like I said, the entire John Wick 2, right?
Well, and I think it's great that in the original John Wick movie, there's a lot of hints to all of these things. We see the Continental, we see the coins, but the film treats us like adults. I know, and it's not something, you know, there's really good art house films, and there's really good films that expect the audience to have a certain level of intelligence and understanding of things. And you don't generally get that in kind of a shoot 'em up, beat 'em up sort of a movie. They're so usually heavy-handed with exposition, and there's so much, this is the coin. These coins are worth this, you know, and they would go back and explain how everything works. And John Wick didn't do any of that. They just used it and expected you to keep up. And then they had the opportunity to expand that universe in the second and the third movie, and because they didn't go and give us all that exposition, you know, I think it made it more, and it made you want more. It made you more interested in, and you kind of want to dig deeper into that universe. And that's a great thing.
Exactly. Like, piggybacking off of that, this series has not only been textbook, but has excelled at story and world building. I mean, honestly, like, I can't nitpick the world building they've done, because, you know, the first one, they do enough of a scene where you realize that it's, you do not conduct business on the Continental. When he gets attacked by the girl,
right,
hit the assassin, you know, they really do they set the precedent really well with the built world they have, and then it's just a part of the world that they expand on in each other movie. And it oh, god damn it.
I will say, there one nitpick that I have for the newest movie that I felt like they missed a golden opportunity is when and it was a beautiful turn to make John Wick have to go and kill the owner of the Continental, and Ian McShane's character knows it's coming. They could have had a moment where Ian McShane tries to escape, you know, realizing that he's doomed, and tries to escape, and he's like climbing over a fence or something, and then John Wick, laying on his side, is about to shoot him as he goes over a fence, and he just ends up firing in the sky, screaming, because he just can't do it. He can't shoot Ian McShane. I really wish that had happened.
Have you ever shot your gun into the air whilst yelling, ah?
It's clearly they're looking at doing a fourth one from the way the third one ended. So if they could maybe work that in at some point in that movie, I would deeply appreciate it. Some point, bring reference, if they're wearing all president masks or something, that would be fine too.
Well, and that's funny, like on the way in, Hob and I went and saw this opening night Thursday. And on the way in, I looked at him and was like, this has got to be it. How are they going to build up the entire world's after John Wick? And I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay. There you go. You answered my question. Thank you. Like, because now it's going to be the entire fucking city against the table. And it's going to be awesome. And what about the head of the guy above the table?
Right.
Like, he's going to have to go too, right? He's not going to let him just murder the table.
That's the fucking thing with these movies is they give you just enough to wet your beak on what this world is about. And then every movie, they add just a little bit, just a sprinkle more. They don't overload it with stuff, but they add you just a little bit more information on the rest of this world. And it all makes sense. It all is very, he's the man above the table. It's like, well, fuck. And he lives in the middle of the fucking desert? What the fuck?
You're going to walk till you die and then walk some more? The fuck?
Well, and I like that not only going up, but they go out. Mm. So we're not only learning about the table. Here's the, what was the girl that came that, I want to say emissary, but that's not the right word.
Ambassador?
Adjudicator.
Thank you.
Yes.
So we learn about the upper, the way that this works, but also at a level that he is, where we see the Bowery. We see the Russians. Mm-hmm. We see all of these other, you know, kind of little communities within the assassin community. And I really loved, you know, we got to see a little bit of Lawrence Fishburne in the last one, but to see the TikTok man that was fantastically,
brilliantly
acted, perfectly done. And then also now, as we go across the level, we get to see the other Continentals, you know, and in the first movie, there's not even a hint that, hey, there's Continentals in other places.
Yep.
Now here we are three movies in and you understand, okay, there's a you know, a safe haven, probably in every country or in multiple cities.
At least in major cities.
Yeah, and how cool is that?
Because we see the second Continental in two.
Right.
But then I think we went through three different Continentals in the third one.
Mm-hmm.
And then not only that, but we see where the fucking markers are made. The history of the Assassin's Marker. Like, that was
artisanal coins.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking bad. He's like, see that? That was the first marker ever made. I'm like, that's badass. That was awesome.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in two, it was Franco Nero goddamn running the Continental in Rome.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I
love him too. Also, like, he shows up and he's like, I just have a question for you. Are you here to kill the Pope? And John Wick's like, nah, bro. And he's like, okay, cool. We're good.
All right.
But he said it as a matter of fact, like, he would not be surprised if that was the case. Like, John Wick here to kill the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
No, it, you know, but
nobody's worried about that in our country.
No.
They're not worried if you're here to kill the leader of our country.
Just stab at it.
This sort of assassin underworld is so prevalent. And this shows up in the third movie that he can get a fucking taxi.
Yeah.
Right?
He can get a taxi and be like, hey, here's a coin. I need you to drop my dog off to the concierge of the Continental. I'm like, dude.
And the cab driver's like, sure thing, Mr. Wick. Like,
you just got a taxi. Like, what the actual fuck is literally 20% of the population of the world?
I mean, clearly at this point, right?
Yeah,
involved in this conspiracy.
Everybody knows.
Of like underground assassins.
Also, there's like eight cops in all of New York. Like, there's like eight of them, and they all just like, hey, John, you back working? You know, they all know. Yeah. They're all fucking aware. They stay the fuck out of it.
But also, like, how awesome was the way they handled the dog in this? Where he's like, no, we're going to keep the whole world's like every assassin's after me. So Continental, please, like they will watch him. And like that was so well done with that, you know. And
I was worried.
Yeah,
I was really worried.
Right?
Yeah, I was
like,
too.
I was like, oh, man, because he's running. He's got the dog. And that was, I mean, as a dog lover, as a, you know, all that kind of stuff that went through my head. I was like, dear God, please don't shoot the dog. Because it was like the most heartbreaking thing in the first John Wick movie.
Yes, it was. Know?
Absolutely.
And it was such a great motivator. And here we are. You know, like so many movies, they killed his wife. They killed his. And when it comes to in this day and age, what's the worst thing you could do to a person? Yeah, he killed his dog.
His
and
puppy,
like,
dog.
That is the. And yeah, I would fucking. And then they played on it again in this one.
That's
with Halle Berry, which was. And when
so
she
brilliant.
Says, well, he shot my dog. And he's like, yeah, I get it.
Dude, the entire theater lost it. Yeah. Fucking lost it at that
part. That was awesome.
Yes, but that dog had body armor and still fucked up a bunch of shit.
He ate the balls. He just ate so many balls that day.
Can we please talk about those dogs?
Yes, absolutely. Because let's get into it. Because that is probably, I was talking with Edward earlier. That's, I think, both our favorite parts of the movie is that the choreography with those dogs was stellar. When the dog did the run up a wall thing. And then I think went straight to balls.
Yeah. Yes. Sick balls.
Sick balls. The
chopper sick balls.
Yeah. Yeah. But so I was really afraid when I started watching at the beginning of this movie, and I'm sitting in the theater, and we've got this whole world's after John Wick, you know, and it picks up right where it left off, and he's running, they're all after him, and they're doing the countdown and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, how in the world, I really hope this isn't 2 hours of just people chasing him because they've got this marker on him and him fighting them. You know what I mean? And it really easily could have been.
It could have been.
And the first fight in the library, which was great, I thought it was a great take on, you know, he killed a guy with a pencil. Now we've got him killing a guy with a book. You know, I thought that was really fantastic. But the movie could have gotten tired really quick if that's all we got.
It would have turned into basically a remake of The Warriors.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yeah. And good call. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that transition of him going to Casablanca, him meeting up with Halle Berry and all of that, and then that whole second part of the movie that's, you know, with him and her together, it was hands down my favorite. It was some of the best choreography. It moved the story forward really well, and it did more of that world building. Like you said, we got to see the coins. We got to understand how the transfer of power goes in the Continentals. You know, it moves down to, you know, this was the guy who ran the Continental. Now he's doing the coins, all that kind of good stuff. I really liked that whole second section of the movie. It was really my favorite part.
When I feel there's like little vignettes that make up this entire film, you've got the first, 10, 15 minutes where it's this absolutely amazing action sequence where he's like riding a fucking horse. He's like the motherfucking knife fight, dude. Modan and I were losing it in the theater.
They didn't even like aim at one point. They were just like literally just throwing just blindly throwing knives.
Like, and they weren't even like sticking. They were just like,
bouncing off each other,
lobbing.
And when he forces the knife into the dude's eye.
But
sound effects.
Not only him like straight gunslinger like side riding the horse, shooting fuckers. When he uses them to kill people and does a double tap with the fucking horse, are you fucking kidding
me?
Yeah,
that was pretty amazing.
Double tapped with a horse. That is awesome.
I have to say, the knife fight was probably my favorite action sequence of the movie.
It was pretty brilliant. They're just surrounded by glass cases of knives.
Because to that point of the movie, which was like 15, 20 minutes in at this point, he hadn't fired a shot.
No.
And he did actually like rebuild an old revolver and fired
one shot.
One shot.
One shot.
But the knife sequence that followed, where they were just busting out cases and throwing ass knives and tomahawks and shit, that was fucking everything.
At the end where the dude is moving right at the end, he's just like, just throws a fucking tomahawk.
So good.
The guy's, so good. Yeah, the guy's gasping, and he's just like, nah, you're dead. That shit was so fucking awesome, and I was like, he's fired one shot so far.
Yeah.
What does this movie have to come?
Well, and I want to send it over to Eddie because I saw the look on your face and we discussed the whole building that old gun.
Yeah, and I get the reasoning and I get the way that they played it. And there is some nitpicks that I have with this as far as the firearms go and that kind of thing. And that was one of them that I did have. It didn't feel necessary, and it was overly simple to tear down and put back together, and it was one of the very few things, and it's one of my favorite things about John Wick, and I'll jump into this now a little bit, is their consistency with the way that they use firearms, the bullet counts, the calibers, even the sound effects. And that was one of my John Wick 2 especially, the change in sound between he's shooting a revolver or a pistol or a shotgun or a rifle. They were accurate. It's how that gun sounds. And if you are a shooter, if you are a gun enthusiast, you know the difference in those things. And so many movies just give you the basics. And one of my biggest pet peeves, and it drives me up a wall, and my wife constantly will just shoot me looks when I point it out in movies, is when they are moving guns around and they constantly make the ch-ch sound. Every time they lift a gun and point it at somebody, it goes ch-ch, ch-ch. And you get that like, it's like a kung fu movie when they move, anytime they move a sword and it slices through the air and you hear it. Guns don't do that. They don't make sounds when you move them around, and so many movies do that.
It's the Wilhelm scream of firearms.
It is. Yeah. It's awful. And every gun, every time you shoot it, it sounds the same and all that. And John Wick does such a wonderful job of getting those things right. And I know that a lot of that is because Keanu Reeves, you know, has trained so extensively with firearms, is, you know, has done competition shooting and all of that kind of stuff and worked so hard and really made sure that those kind of things were accurate. And it doesn't take me out of the movie. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy. I can kind of invest myself in this film without being taken out of it by cheap sound effects or cheap things with firearms that just aren't realistic. You know? Yeah.
No, I understand that.
Now, I have to say, I have a huge adoration for early John Woo movies. Okay.
Because the directors both credited John Woo movies
the killers
as
and such,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Better Tomorrow, The Killers, like The Killer, fucking amazing films. But that style of like violence and gunplay is so exaggerated. And when, you know, just to talk about what Edward was talking about, you know, when you can fire 18 shots from a Tokarev pistol sliding down the stairs in, you know, in a movie, you know, for anybody who knows guns, it takes you out of it.
Yeah.
But you can suspend your disbelief because it's stylized and it's fun.
Sure.
But this movie gets it right. It has gotten it right since the beginning. This movie, the third one, got, you know, strayed a little bit, but otherwise, I've been so happy.
I do agree that the third one has strayed a little bit. Now, again, any nitpick I bring up about this movie is me saying it with love because I fucking loved John Wick 3.
Yeah,
so it's just like what I'm noticing different from the other ones. Mm-hmm. And as long as they don't go too far in the next one with it, they still keep it concise, then it's not going to be a problem. They cannot get lazy with that. Mm-hmm. Now, I think
John Wick learns to bend bullets.
Yeah, like I don't want a wanted movie. What was that with the
bullet? No spoon?
Yeah, right.
The bullet thing where it's like
curved bullets.
Yeah, wanted to
go around corners.
I don't want that shit.
No, Angelina
from John Wick.
Jolie kind of. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, Angelina Jolie no. Literally
fucking
kills
James McAvoy,
every like, single person in a circle with one bullet.
No,
yeah, that's...
no. But I think the greatest scene in all three of where they showed about the realism of just like bullet count and whatnot is when like in two, when Lawrence Fishburne's like, you have seven bullets. And then he shoots seven in the first, like in like 20 seconds. And he has to start picking up guns because he's done. He's I use them, you know, and that's it. And he literally the rest of the movie, he's picking up weapons. That's where we got the pencil scene.
Yep.
He killed three dudes with a pencil.
Yep.
It reminded me of fucking Contra, where like you get a different type of weapon when you kill a guy.
Yeah, but that was the greatest, one of the greatest scenes as far as keeping up with that, because like they didn't like all of a sudden, oh, he's gotten a clip. No, he had seven bullets.
Well, they did that in the most recent one too, and I thought the scene, and it's my favorite scene in the whole movie, the whole fight scene with him and Halle Berry, with the dogs just going ape shit, her commanding them and them jumping up walls and running over tables and all of that craziness. But they continually fire and stop and take magazines and take weapons off the guys that have fallen to keep going. And it's not this continual, I've got an unlimited amount of rounds in
sure.
this gun. And I really appreciated the fact that both she comes out, she's carrying a SIG P365, which is a 9mm handgun. He, in the second and in the third movie, he's using a Glock 34, which is it's a 9mm handgun, and he also uses a Glock 19, also a 9mm handgun. And so they're consistent with the ammunition. They're consistent with being able to exchange magazines between the handguns and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was really, again, for somebody who's a gun nerd like myself, it's really important. And it you notice those little things. You get it. You got oh yeah, that's the right gun for that situation, and he's using it correctly. And that makes in a movie that's really very gun-centric, I thought that was really very cool.
I hope John Wick actually sets a new precedent in action films about the way that guns are used in these films, because as somebody that has an interest in handguns, but I'm not like a gun nerd, like you. that is not making fun of. That's like I do have interest in handguns, but I don't have a deep knowledge as you do about this stuff. But I do absolutely recognize hand placement on the weapons in this is absolutely the way you're supposed to be handling a weapon. It's not this like one-handed arcing down from high up, like
turning the gun sideways
and all this crap. Yeah. No, it's like absolutely complete control over the weapon, walking in a certain way to keep an even barrel, like as he's walking. I mean, it's very tactical. The way
that they took cover, the way that they shot the guns, the way that you can see them. One of my biggest pet peeves is when people shoot from the hip and hit something 50 yards away. You know, he's actually shooting. And yeah, it's not, you suspend the disbelief because every single shot hits somebody. But the amount of work they did, and I don't know if any of you have seen the videos of Halle Berry doing the tactical training that she did, shooting three gun competitions, going and actually she went and trained with at a Marines training facility.
Nice.
And you should see her shooting legitimate, like not blanks, not in a movie, really shooting targets and running through situations. Yeah, she's kind of badass. Okay. You know, it's really cool.
And I will say what has been consistent too is the distance they're holding the gun has been consistent throughout all three. Like, I noticed this because going back and watching the first two, like, you know, if there's no need for them to have to extend out to shoot, he holds it like this. Like, he's boom. He's definitely, it's every placement and hand position that he's using to shoot is specific to what he's trying to shoot.
Yeah.
And honestly, you will go between different hand positions, between the different targets. Yep. You'll see him switch, and it's like, oh! Like, that blows my mind.
And I think it looks cooler. Yeah. I think it actually looks cooler than the weird, like, cinematic versions of shooting guns that have been in previous films. This looks way more badass.
It's kind of like Equilibrium, right? When they
Gun Fu.
When they were Gun Fu and Gun Kata and all that kind of stuff.
That movie's also for a different reason.
but that over-stylized aspect of it, they don't do that in it. And they really could have very easily done that. And instead they did... Hey, this is actually how it's done. This is an actual tactical stance. These are how these firearms would have responded, and I think it's great. It just adds so much to it.
I also love that part of the action sequences they're showing. There's one scene during the dog fight in Casablanca,
yeah,
where they're all out of ammo at the same time, like three dudes, and they all stop and reload. They're like a couple feet from each other, and it's like who can load the fastest.
Yes.
And there's a lot of scenes of John Wick, like, doing these reload moments, and it's like a second, and he's changing out
shotgun shells.
Yeah.
Oh, so fast.
And can we talk about the use of in the scenes where he has multiple guns, the use of how he uses the guns? It's not like traditional action movies where you have the big gun and you blow through it and that's it, and then you move down the size of the artillery, right? So, like, I'm going back to John Wick 1. So it's when he goes and confronts the father, trying to find out where the son is. There's a huge scene like in like a parking lot area, and he's like going around SUVs, like blocking, and I believe he's got an AK with him at that point. Mm-hmm. And he's shooting the AK, it runs out, and he just throws to the side, pulls out his 9, shoots until he can get cover, then reloads the AK and goes back to the AK. So he's bouncing between his different guns depending on where his circumstance is versus just running through it and that's it.
Yep.
Like that to me is what I want to see in a movie.
And I know a lot of guys who are combat vets who love the John Wick movies. And for those guys that have been over there who have, you know, who are trained, who do understand these things, that's a big thing for them. You know what I mean? It adds the realism because it's like, you know, if you're really into any specific thing and it's featured in a film and it's not realistically done, you're not going to have that excitement for the movie. It takes you out of it.
It's like when the Goombas in the Mario Brothers movie were giant reptiles with little heads.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of mushrooms.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well,
it's exactly
if
like
you
that.
Are, if you are a comic book nerd and they don't do that comic book character properly or they give them the wrong superpower or they use it the wrong way, you're going to notice and it's going to ruin the movie for you. And for somebody who is a gun nerd or who has had combat training to be in this movie and to be able to see them used correctly, It's awesome. It is absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good place for us to stop for our break. We're going to go to a commercial break where you get to hear about some of the shit happening in town with Geeks Under the Influence. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our sponsors, do a drunken scene, maybe talk about what we're drinking a little bit. So stick around. We'll be back in just a minute. We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast for an announcement that will blow your mind. Geeks Under the Influence is taking it to the convention at GalaxyCon in Richmond, Virginia from May 31st to June 2nd for live shows of Geeks Under the Influence, Beautiful Disasters, Smack My Pitch Up, and Geek Father. Come out and enjoy some of your favorite shows from the GUI network from May 31st to June 2nd. Geeks Under the Influence will be taking the stage at 7:45 on May 31st in panel room E24A. to do an episode all about time travel. We're going to be talking Doctor Who. We're going to be talking about Back to the Future. We're going to be talking about lesser-known sci-fi TV shows and movies that talk about time travel and just time travel in general on a show that you can come out to and actually get involved with. We're going to have some discussion with the crowd during the episode. You can follow that up on Saturday, June 1st at 10:30 a.m. with the Geek Father in the large panel room E22 A and B for an episode that involves you as well, talking about your parenting experiences as a geek parent. So come and join Scotty Big Daddy Preston to talk all things geek parenting. At 4:45 in panel room E24A, join Beautiful Disasters as they talk a number of different schlock cinema films featuring celebrities that you can see at GalaxyCon. At 8:15 p.m. on June 1st, come and check me out at Smack My Pitch Up in panel room E24B, where me and Kyle Smash of Smash Talk will be talking a reboot, remake, sequel, sidequel, or reimagining of the kung fu classic, The Karate Kid. Come out as we ruin one of my personal favorite movies from my childhood in front of a live studio audience. On Sunday, June 2nd at 3:30 p.m., come to E22AB to check out Adventures in Podcasting, where we talk about podcasting itself and how you can get some tips and tricks if you're looking to get into podcasting yourself. When all is said and done on Sunday, come out to the Dark Room at the Hofheimer Building in Richmond, Virginia, for a live recording of Booze Clues. We're doing it again. We've got two episodes in the can and a third one coming out June 2nd. Doors are at 6, shows at 7. Come and check me out as I bring a cavalcade of performers, comedians, and podcasters to talk about the world's most spirited headlines. We're going to investigate, quote-unquote, some of these stories and kind of look for some insight for you in front of a live crowd. So be part of that crowd. Be part of the audience. It's a lot of fun. It's basically just some improv stand-up talking about spirited headlines. We got plenty more planned for you over the summer at Geeks Under the Influence, so definitely stay tuned to GOIPodcast.com. All of our social media and Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join the conversation, join the party, come and see us live, and we'll see you there. This is Mike the Hobbit, direct from Fallout on a trivia night, telling you to come here every first and third Monday for trivia between 8 and 10, 25-cent wings, drink specials, prizes, and tons of really inappropriate trivia. It's a lot of fun. Do you guys agree? Definitely come out and enjoy trivia every first and third Monday at Fallout. We're back for the second half of our episode dedicated to one John Wick, the biggest, baddest motherfucker around. I'm having so much fun so far talking about these movies that we all absolutely love. Fantastic films. Before we get into the second half, though, we have to talk about some other badasses. I'm talking about our sponsors, the ones that give us a little bit of cheddar to help us get this podcast network going. First one, of course, is our oldest running sponsor on this show is Amazon.com. And 4th of July is coming, ladies and gentlemen, so you're going to need some new cooking tools. You're going to need American flag cape, some American flag sunglasses and swim trunks and the
Speedo.
Like.
American Speedo. Flag Speedo.
I know there's some American flag Speedos out there.
And that some have solar lights for your yard.
Solar lights for your yard, tiki torches, all that stuff.
There you go.
Maybe
not the tiki torches.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Let's get away from the tiki torches.
Just see if they have tiki torches to say, not racist tiki torch. Just printed on the side of it.
Oh, shit.
Not to be used for alt-right.
Yes.
Uses.
Just by the rainbow-colored tiki
there
torch.
You go.
There you go.
Okay.
Fine. And you're all good.
You're safe.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, could you see me like putting in tiki torches in the backyard and my neighbors being like,
Yeah.
Dude, it's just for bugs.
It's
just for bugs.
What do you mean by bugs?
Like literally mosquitoes. Yeah,
no,
like,
sorry.
God damn it.
We've gone anyway, off the rails.
Yep, yeah, there anyways. It is. Anyway.
Anyway, Amazon.com. You can help us out just by shopping through our link at GYPodcast.com. Top right corner of the homepage. Click that Amazon link. Anything you purchase through that link, we get credit for. So you're spending the same that you would on your American flag capes and non-racist tiki torches and banana hammocks. And we're getting a little bit of a credit for that. That helps goes towards storage fees for the podcast, booze, equipment, all the stuff that goes into GUI, making us what we are today. So help us out. Go to Amazon.com through our link at GUIPodcast.com.
Yeah, the more you do that, the more we can be more than what we are today.
Yes. With your help, we can get more drunkerer.
Words with him.
With better sounding equipment as well. So clearer drunkenness.
There you go.
Yes.
And you'll hear every stumble and slur.
Absolutely. You want to get your crystal clear stammer? Then that's the way to do it.
It's all about being authentic. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Also, a way to support GUI is to show your love for the Geeks Under the Influence with a t-shirt or a cell phone case, stickers, banners, all sorts of stuff. Merch available at TeePublic. You can go to GUIpodcast.com/store. And we have a link to our TeePublic page that has 17 designs, about to be 18 designs. I'm about to drop a Booze Clues design. Ooh. On the store. And it's similar to the logo for Booze Clues with a slightly different take on it. So it's going to be a fun little design. That's all at our TeePublic store. We've got it. There's all sorts of stuff. There's even like coffee mugs and like journals, all sorts of stuff that you can get with all the designs we have available. We have all the shows from the network on there. We've got designs created by a number of the panelists. Actually, Kron just designed a shirt that we talked about over the weekend that we're going to be putting up on the site. And it's a giant mushroom cloud and just says, fuck Michael Bay on it.
Yes. So, I'm so buying that. Dude. Yeah. That's so going in my closet.
Yeah. That's a shirt that I need to own as well. So that's going to be up on the site as well very soon. So go check that out at GUIpodcast.com/store. Also, we have hats, koozies, and stickers available exclusively at GUI Network events. So you can only get that at Trivia, Live Booze Clues, our Geekified nights when we do that, curated movie nights when we do those. All those, we should have hats, stickers, and koozies available. So definitely come and check out some GUI stuff live. It's always a good time, and you can get some exclusive merch that way as well. Now on to the fuel that drives this show, the booze that gets us all nimbly-bimbly on guns and booze. That's what this episode's all about, is guns and booze.
Not together.
No, never together. No.
You're allowed to talk about guns when drinking booze, but we're talking about what we're drinking.
Hey! We're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey.
Yay.
Oh, Kyle.
Oh, Kyle. I cannot wait to
play that. Yeah, have him sing that live.
Live, yeah. We're going to make him do it live. I haven't told him yet. So if he doesn't listen to this episode, we'll find out live at the show.
That is gonna be the best thing ever.
It's gonna be great.
Shit.
Just figure out how he doesn't say fucking in that song, because it's, you know, we're trying not to curse too much at the live show.
True.
So anyway, we're talking about what we're drinking. We got some shares here that we want to go over first. Let's send it over to Lowdown. You got a nice tasty beverage for us here.
I brought a New England style IPA from Triple Crossing. You know, I always keep it East Coast local, bitches.
East Coast local.
This is Richmond, Virginia, Triple Crossing. As far as breweries around town, between them and the Vale, they are the masters at the New England style IPA, which is the only IPA I like to drink because I don't like IPAs. Although I found this.
I'd say I like the clientele at Triple Crossing a little bit better than the Vale.
Truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But you got to admit, like, I never brought IPAs to shares until I found New England IPAs. And I'm like, okay, it's like I'm drinking juice. I want to have bacon and eggs with my orange juice IPA. That's basically where I'm going with that. But this is called Dislocated Day. And I feel like every John Wick movie, that's what he's having.
Yeah, in a row.
No, this is in the place of like a week. Yeah, that all
that's
three
the other thing.
Take place.
How the fuck is this in a week?
It's like a week.
No wonder he's so tired in the third one.
He's exhausted. Like, he's had a really rough week.
We're definitely going to talk about how much injury he has sustained, and apparently been able to
get the pills,
through.
Man. It's those pills, bro. Those white pills. They give you the in for that, man.
I guess.
First one.
Yeah. Well, this is the crossover when he ends up in the MCU, is he's actually a mutant. Got a little bit of a healing factor, and that's gonna roll right into him being
so
Deadpool
much.
Got to. You know?
Can we get a fan-made film, please?
Oh,
like
my
something?
Can we please have a Deadpool John Wick crossover movie?
I'm totally in.
I would show up just completely stark raving nude to the theater.
And no one else would be in there. Yeah. It would make no money.
With John Wick being just really pissed off at him and like every couple of minutes just shooting him in the side of the head because he won't shut up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. I actually really want that in my life.
Awesome.
Can we get that? Anyway.
Yes, continue.
But yeah, so I was there a couple weeks, like 2 weeks ago, and I got a crowler of this, and it's It's only a 6%er, so it's not your traditional New England IPA. Those tend to be like double hopped and a little heavier on the alcohol. Flavor profile is still the same. It's just dumbed down enough to where like I can drink this in like three or four of them and not be hammered. You know, so I was a real fan of this because I was, you know, I drink a lot of New England IPAs, but they are all very heavy. So,
well, I'm with you. I'm not an IPA fan by any stretch, and this is drinkable. It's very nice. It's
tasty.
It's crisp. It's not that IPA floral.
No pine here.
You're not eating potpourri.
Which is the traditional West Coast style.
That I
cannot stand. Yeah.
No, this is drinkable. It's really good.
Glad everyone liked it. Yep.
Hell yeah. Tasty beverage. What was the ABV on that?
6%.
6%.
Yeah, so good sessional.
Yeah, not a dick kicker.
Not even close.
No.
That's not even really grazing the dick at that point.
I do have one. I'm probably going to bring next time though, so you'll be fine.
Okay, it'll be fine. Groots, you were nice enough to bring a little tasty beverage for us as well.
Yes, indeed.
Really good.
This is a kind of a blend mashup of some of my favorites that I've brought before, and so this is a 1-to-2 ratio. So it's one part Hellcat Maggie, two parts Buffalo Trace. Hellcat Maggie already as an Irish whiskey is aged in bourbon barrels, and then Buffalo Trace being one of the best mid-level bourbons available when you can get it.
Because bourbon hoarders.
Exactly.
Shit.
Apparently, in other states, it's much more prevalent. Like, I think just Virginia has a really hard time sourcing shit or making their shit work.
I remember that in
whatever
Maryland when we go to Hunt Valley, Maryland, and I just go, like, buy them out of Buffalo Trace.
Right, exactly.
Seriously.
And apparently, like, Elmer T. Lee is all over the place, not here. What the fuck?
Flying fuck!
Anyway, yeah. One part that, two parts Buffalo Trace. I think it's...
some smooth shit, man.
Delicious. Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was Hellcat in it. I could taste it. I was like, I bet there's Hellcat Maggie in this.
Yeah. So it's super smooth, and that's my podcast drink for
also, it's appropriate that we have whiskey on this episode because that was John Wick's drink of choice.
Bourbon.
Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah. If I could afford a big-ass bottle of goddamn, what is it that he drinks?
Yeah.
It's Blanton's.
Blanton's.
Oh, Blanton's.
Yeah.
Okay.
He drinks.
Oh, the, yeah.
So Buffalo Trace. So Buffalo Trace.
It's still the same company.
Yeah.
No, he drinks straight up Blanton's. And he had it in the first and second movie, but I don't think he actually drank a drop in the third movie.
No. He actually, they handed him the guy that made the coins.
Yep.
Handed him a drink.
He put it down.
He didn't drink it. He put it down.
It was a bourbon, though, I don't think, so.
It looked like a whiskey. It was a brown.
It was
brown
something, yeah. But, like, you know, he pretty much just didn't have time in this movie.
Well, it's a running trope in most movies that the badass always drinks bourbon. Like, that's pretty standard.
Because bourbon. Delicious.
Yep.
He didn't have time because he was killing motherfuckers.
Yeah,
truth. Exactly.
Pretty much the entire movie. Anyway, that's my
That was very nice.
Well, no,
very
it was. John Wick appreciates proper gun safety. And he knows not to drink and shoot. So that's why he's like, I got some killing to do.
Way to go, John.
Shortly. I've got an appointment with murder here pretty soon, and I want to make sure that I'm sober for it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
A responsible hitman, you know.
I like it.
Making sure not to handle guns under the influence. Yes.
I love that.
Guns under the influence.
Guns
GY.
Under the influence.
GY. That's GY.
GY.
That's we don't do.
There you go, Ed Weird, if you want to start your own show.
Guns
under the influence.
No, let's not do that.
This, you know, he's got like his concealed carry, you know, taken away. Like, what'd I do? You have a dude.
Your entire base influence. Of people that would listen to that episode was like, what are you doing?
It's like, no.
This is a terrible idea.
It's a really bad idea.
I mean, you probably have a really, I don't want to, you know, stereotype too much. You probably have a really huge redneck following. I lived in the boony country, and like, they don't mind booze and guns.
I mean, I'll get drunk and fish. You know, but drunk and shoot is a different animal.
I've seen hunters
how I fish is with guns. So.
I've seen hunters. I saw hunters come out of the wood with a bottle and a shotgun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That would be a really funny YouTube video for like a month. And then obviously criminal charges would happen.
I think we have an idea for our tangential for GUI Nights.
Yes, we
now,
do.
But,
yeah. Right.
Edward, you brought a tasty beverage for this episode. What are you sipping on?
And it's right here. Oh. So I'm a big cider fan. This is a Potter's Craft Cider.
It's good cider.
It's their farmhouse dry, and it's excellent. It's very, very drinkable. It is 8.4, so not horrible.
No, but it's for a cider, that's solid.
Yeah, it's real solid. It's got it says that it is a farmhouse cider, pale gold, with a fruit, a pronounced aroma of peach and melon. I don't know if I got any melon on it, but it was really nice. It was a good dry cider. I don't like overly sweet ciders. I try and stay away from that.
Yeah, same.
This wasn't sweet at all. It was a real nice, clean, crisp cider. So yeah, definitely check that out if you get a chance. Potter's Craft Cider. Very good.
Oh yeah, I checked them out about.
And they're
2 years
also
ago.
East Coast local.
Yes, they are.
Free Union, Virginia. Mm-hmm. So
I checked them out about 2 years ago, and I was taken aback at first because I wasn't expecting the dryness of it, but it's definitely a Virginia style, more adhering to English ciders.
Yes, really crisp.
Really crisp. Very really crisp. Dry.
Yep.
And that's almost what I like in my ciders is a nice crisp.
It reminded me of Ace.
Okay.
Yes.
It did remind me of Ace.
You know, Bold Rock does have really dry ciders when you go to the Bold Rock Cidery.
Also,
they have them in bottles like that, served like champagne style, and they're really dry and they're fucking delicious.
And actually, the Bold Rock IPA is not an overly sweet.
I love it.
The IPA is really good. All right, and I'm not doing anything special. I'm doing a vodka and lemonade because this is really the first actually hot weekend.
It was hot today, like 95.
It was like muggy.
It was fucking hot.
So I figured something nice and summery to celebrate the fact that I get to put my winter coats away and wear shorts.
I like winter.
Much to everyone's chagrin. Edward's wearing a Hawaiian shirt to celebrate as well. Yeah,
dude, you're like the bearded Charlie Sheen with that shit.
We're going to get into our next segment, which is known as Making a Drunken Scene.
Making a Drunken Scene.
Every time.
Stupid.
It's so stupid. I love it. There's nothing that's not stupid about this podcast. So, I mean, that's false.
That's accurate.
Right in. So, we were talking when figuring out who was playing what, that there aren't many scenes in any of the John Wick movies where there's more than two people talking at the same time. So we have two different scenes, from one from John Wick 1 and one from John Wick 2 that we're going to be doing. The first one here is a really important scene in John Wick 1 between Vigo and Iosef Tarasov about talking about John Wick. And it's a very poignant scene. It's that's where they mention his nickname, Baba Yaga, for the first time. I'll be playing the father, Vigo, and my child, my wee baby boy.
Yeah. Like twice your size, fucker.
Yosef. I'm older. I mean, like, I wasn't fucking at three, but like, so I'm not old enough to be your father, but
I wasn't fucking at three.
It was five before I started fucking.
Gotta hit that, like, you know, centennial mark.
I gotta hit preschool first to get all the ladies.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, let's stray away from that conversation there. So, Lowdown will be playing Iosef.
Preschool bitches, motherfucker.
Yeah, right. You want to go down that slide with me?
Ooh, and by slide up, never mind.
Yep.
Wow.
We're changing the subject. All right, moving into this scene where we're talking about Baba Yaga. So, be prepared for my terrible Russian accent. Here we go.
It's not what you did, son, that angers me so. It's who you did it to.
Who? That fucking nobody?
That fucking nobody is John Wick. He once was an associate of ours. They called him Baba Yaga.
The boogeyman?
Well, John wasn't exactly the boogeyman. He was one you sent to kill the fucking boogeyman.
Oh!
John is a man of focus, commitment, sheer will, something you've known very little about. I once saw him kill three men in a bar with a pencil, with a fucking pencil. Then suddenly one day, suddenly one day he asked to leave. It's over a woman, of course. So I made a deal with him. I gave him an impossible task, a job no one could have pulled off. the poor DC buried it. They laid the foundation of what we are now. And then, my son, a few days after his wife died, you steal his car and kill his fucking dog.
Hey, yo, Pops, I can make this right.
Yeah, that's how it went.
Oh, how do you plan that?
But finishing what I started.
What the... Did he hear a fucking word I said?
Yo, Pops, I can do this. Please.
Yosef. Yosef. Listen, huh? John will come for you. And you'll do nothing because you can do nothing. You get the fuck out of my sight.
Yay.
That was worse than a Russian accent in Glow.
3 or 4 moments. That is all you need to be a superhero.
About on par with, yes.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
He's like now, a little... He's like a...
Now my face hurts from laughing.
Dude.
God damn it.
Oh, I was just picturing a cartoon Russian bear saying those words.
Oh, no.
Wasn't there that, like, Russian, like, Guardians of the Galaxy movie that came out?
Oh, Guardians. I was the guest on that episode of Beautiful Disasters, and that was a blast. God.
That movie was redonkulous.
That shit was bananas.
Yeah.
And there was a bear with a machine gun.
There was. He had a machine gun arm.
With a Gatling gun.
Arm, yeah.
Yeah.
They had, like, the wannabe Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Because Russia.
Because Russia.
Yeah.
That shit was
You're not
going to
have a Russian superhero movie without a bear with a Gatling gun. Yeah. All right, so this next scene, we've got Ed Wyrd and the Groots doing, is from John McTwo, and it's the sommelier scene where he wants to do a tasting and goes over some of the choices for weaponry moving into the second part.
So I haven't read this, and anytime we've done a drunken scene, I've always read it ahead of time so I know what I'm getting into. I haven't read this, so I'm going to stumble over words.
That's fine. That's completely appropriate.
You're good, man.
Yeah.
You're good.
If there's anywhere that's appropriate, drunken scene, I think, is probably
just,
okay.
You know, so. Normally I'm more on top of my game.
No, you're
we get it. It's okay.
As on top of your game as you need to be. Mm. So, starting with the sommelier, played by Ed Wyrd.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wick. Been a long time.
I'd like a tasting.
Where are you? Why?
I know of your past fondness for German varietals, but I can wholeheartedly endorse the new breed of Austrians. Glock 34, 26, recontoured grips, flared magwells for easier reloads. And I know you'll appreciate the custom porting. What's next?
I need something robust.
Stop. That is upsetting.
Precise.
Stop it. Are you salad fingers? What are you doing?
Robust and precise. AR-15. 11.5-inch compensated with an ion-bonded bolt carrier Trigicon Occupoint 1.6 magnification.
Could you recommend anything for the end of the night? Something big. Bold.
Jesus.
May I suggest... The Benelli M4 custom bolt, carrier release, charging handle, textured grips should your hands get wet. An Italian classic?
Dessert?
Dessert.
Oh.
The finest cutlery. All fresh stoned. Shall I have everything sent to your room?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Excellent, Mr. Wick. Do enjoy your party.
I hate both of you so much.
That shit was hilarious. Fuck you. That was funny as fuck. That was fucking awesome. Well done, gentlemen. Well done.
I do have a semi right now.
I saw your glass shifted.
Yeah. I have like a reverse erection where it's like going inward instead of outward.
Well done, gentlemen. Well done. Bravo. Bravo.
Oh, Jesus.
That was good stuff. That was fucking hilarious.
So now moving on to entertaining our one listener left after that with John Wick. So for the last bit here, I do want to kind of go over some of our nitpick issues with the with the third movie. And what I have enjoyed is that it's gotten a little bit crazier and a little bit crazier with each following movie. The first movie was very realistic. It took place mostly in one area of New York, basically.
Yeah.
And it was extremely realistic. And the second movie, it got a little bit bigger and a little bit more wild, but it was still relatively realistic. It was bigger, more grandiose, like gunplay moments and action scenes, but it was still relatively believable. Now, the third one, do you think it's full-on shark jump at this point, or they're just getting a little bit more physics not being as effective as they used to be?
So, with that, I will say that I thought the choreography was good in some parts, and by good, I mean up to par with the other two. I will say lazy in other parts as far as the fight scenes. Like, there were some, but I also have to take into account that he's broken at this point. But the villain's not, and the villain is as slow as is like slowing down as like he is, so that doesn't really make sense, right?
I do want to say that the first two movies really did keep up with the sort of action aesthetic that they set initially, in the original. But the third one pretty much was an action movie start to finish. There really wasn't a whole lot of interstitial scenes that, actually like created new, world building or whatnot. I mean, there was,
I want to say there were four. There were four main ones. There was the scene with the man from the table before the best action sequence, in my opinion, of the entire movie.
Right.
There was the one with the owner of the hotel being like, "Are you gonna kill me?" And he's like, "Nah, I think not." That was an important scene. There was the scene.
Elder.
There was the scene with the man above the table. Mm-hmm. Was the third one.
That
and
was
then
a really big.
The
scene.
Final one where just before John Wick is shot and falls out the window.
The entire scene with the Russians, with him learning about his family and,
that was the
home there
and the marker that
the marker that they burn into his back.
Yeah,
that backstory that comes into that leads into a whole different world, and that's one of the things that I have to say I really I loved this nod. It was one of my favorite things about this whole movie was the way that they handled that where he grew up in that and we're assuming that this is how he grew up, right? That there was the wrestling and the fighting and the whatever for the boys.
They even said, "Remember this."
And then there was the ballet. And you understand that they did a great nod to ballet and dance and all of that. And the fighting styles that he does being like a dance. And I thought that was a really, really nice nod to the similarities between dance and fight. And
There absolutely is.
And it was so well done, and you see that poor girl has to do it over and over and over again, and when she says stop, and she kind of falls down, and you see, like, the bruises on her thighs, and the girl pulling the toenail off. They work as hard to learn to be beautiful and elegant as these
and
other...
And fucking tatted.
Yes.
Like, they are fucking tattooed for ballerinas.
It was really, really good, and it showed, like, the sacrifices that the dancers make in the same way that the sacrifices that the fighters make. And I thought that was really cool.
It was equal across the board world. Yeah.
I'm really actually kind of sad that my wife fell asleep. Because of some of the ongoing action sequences at that point in the movie, because she was in ballet for many years of her youth, and that whole toenail ripping scene would have been very, like, cathartic, I guess. But
I thought about her when I saw that scene, honestly. I did. I was like, oh, Jody would be like either ecstatic or like, hey, I
remember many a drunken night of her showing first position, second position, third position.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'm serious. Like, I did think about her in that scene because I'm like, oh, I know somebody who did that shit. Oh, fuck.
I will say this. Like, it's not that the world building scenes were not important. they were good. Angelica Houston, like the whole sequence in Morocco, in Casablanca, great. But this movie was 2 hours and 10 minutes long. And there was so much action that it really felt like it, you know, like any kind of scenes that was going to advance the plot were kind of like just squeezed in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of how I
feel. Yeah. No, I feel you on that. That's a good way to put that.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about one of my nitpicks. And I want to preface this with one of the characters that I really liked the most in this film. And we haven't even talked about him yet.
I was going to make sure we touch on it because I know who you're talking about.
One of my very favorite, and I absolutely love the actor. So Zero.
Yep.
Yeah.
Was fantastic.
As a fanboy, I love they made him a fanboy of John Wick.
And I love the way that he dropped back and forth between his accents and like, you know, playing the Japanese character. And so and I assume that you guys know who he is.
Yeah. Mark Dacascos?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a whole season, too.
Right. He was also on the...
Oh, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
The cooking show. Iron Chef.
Yeah.
He was in the U.S. Iron Chef.
U.S. Iron Chef. Yeah. His uncle was on the original Japanese Iron Chef. He also is an action star in his own right. Have any of you seen Brotherhood of the Wolf?
I love that
movie.
One of
my favorite movies, and he was fantastic in that. Really, really great French film. If you haven't seen it, go look up.
I have not seen that.
Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Oh, you would absolutely love this movie.
Great werewolf movie.
It's possibly my favorite werewolf movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
And
yeah.
Monica Bellucci is in that.
Monica Bellucci
really
in it.
Beautiful movie. And
it beats Dog Soldiers. I'm just saying.
The fight scenes.
And I love Dog Soldiers.
Amazing. Yeah. Brotherhood of the Wolf. Great. Les Pactes de Lupus.
Okay.
Fantastic movie.
Okay.
And he's in that, and he does a really, really great job in that. And I thought his character in this was so good and so wonderful. That being said, the third act fight scene with him and the other guys who were his students, that he talks about his students and all that kind of stuff. Specifically, I had a little bit of like, I got tired of seeing John being thrown through glass.
Yes.
Things.
Also, some of the choreography,
ridiculous.
You could see him just kind of falling
waiting.
Forward. Yeah. Like
and,
there was
and the choreography got sloppy in there. And especially I got tired of it. Like they kept fighting and they kept doing and they kept doing and they kept fighting. And I got tired of it. And the scene that I didn't like from this movie, the only thing that I can say outright, like I didn't like this whole aspect of this part of this movie, was him fighting the two, I'm going to call them twin brothers.
Mm.
They looked similar enough that I'm going to say they're maybe brothers.
Oh, yeah. The Indonesian guys?
Yes, with the knives.
Yeah.
The fight was sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The choreography was really forced, and you could see all of them waiting for the next person to take the
swing.
Absolutely, you could.
Yes, you could.
It took me out of it. And then the whole thing of them like, okay, you want to get back up? I'm going to help. And I know it was played for comedic effect, but it took away the immediacy. It took away the danger. It made it feel like him fighting Morpheus in the training program.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
sure.
I mean? Because you know he's not going to die. And so when they're helping him back up and they're not really pushing him all that hard and they're making jokes about it, it took all of the immediacy away from that scene. It made it less important. And then he lets them live and all. It just, I didn't like the way that was handled at all.
And actually, that's the thing I was going to bring up is like, I like that character, Zero. Like,
yeah.
I thought he was, like, when they first introduced him making the sushi, I'm like, oh, okay. And that's, I mean, he's how you found out it's only been a week. Because he mentions, like, for a week, yeah, they killed his dog and stole his car, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, the scene with him and John in the Continental when he comes back and he gets his dog back, but he's, like, fanboying after he just tried to kill him, right? Awesome.
Yeah.
But that last second, the amount of fanboying killed it for me. Right? Like, it was too much.
It was a little
They really harped on it too much. When comedy's always been in the John Wick films, but they really just crossed the line on that last bit, and it really killed it for me. You know what else killed it for me, too? We already know there's a suspension of disbelief with John Wick, even though they keep it very close-knit and, you know, to being realistic to a tactical gunfighter. But the part where, like, at the end when he falls off the side of the building. He hits the fucking fire escape, dude.
Yeah.
That would have broke his back.
Yeah,
I was going to talk about that,
like,
too.
There has never been a scene where I've said there's no way he's walking away from that except for that fucking scene.
Yep.
That scene out of all three movies.
Well,
like,
and then go back to Zero. Because stabbed through the chest.
Yeah.
The sitting up and still talking and
yeah.
making jokes.
Yeah. I just need to catch my breath. Yeah, it was terrible. It was fucking terrible.
That was bad.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, they shouldn't have.
I will say this. They miscast Zero.
Okay. I want to hear that.
Yeah. Because that motherfucker should have been played by Sonny Chiba. Okay.
Oh.
He would have been too old, dude.
He's a little too old, but
too old, man.
You know that
Sonny
guy.
Chiba 20 years ago would have been perfect.
Like Street Fighter Sonny Chiba, yeah. Yes.
No. You know he can cut sushi. We saw it in
Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. But, you know, Mark DeCascos, he didn't bring the gravity. Okay. Yes, he was serious.
There was no serious threat, is what you're talking about? That he didn't bring the threat like Sonny Chiba would have?
He just didn't bring the acting gravity of like an... Like, I feel like the adjudicator should have found like an old, grizzled, bad motherfucker to go after John Wick.
So you've got that level of like experience over top of John Wick. Like, I've survived longer than you motherfucker, so I'm coming after you now kind of
thing. Exactly.
I got you.
Exactly.
Okay.
I got a better casting than that.
No, you don't.
Sonny Chiba, dude. I mean,
Donnie fucking Yen.
Ooh.
Yeah.
No, he can play comedic. He can do comedic very well.
Oh, he can.
And he's also a masterful martial artist. Sonny
Chiba. Yes, he is, but he does not have the gravity of fucking Sonny Chiba. Dude, I'm sorry.
But I liked Mark in
this
role.
I did.
No,
I
did.
He was great.
I got a problem with the casting.
And I actually liked the fact that he was like this when she meets him in the sushi restaurant and he says, you know, I'm very interested. You get that idea that he's just this young, kind of hungry, wants to make his mark, and if he can make his mark by killing John Wick, like you get that drive out of him. And I think that's kind of cool. And I can get behind that. And I kind of like the fact that he's looking to kill his hero. You know, like, that was fun.
No, exactly. That's what it is. It's like, not only is he fanboying, but he's like, I'll be the motherfucker that kills you.
I'll be the guy that kills you.
I do like that. I do like the fact that they chose that, but I feel like it would have been better to pick an older, like, grizzled dude that is, like, even more notorious than John Wick.
Now...
Because, like, I have to say... John Wick is played as like an avenging like superhero in this movie. Like everybody knows his name. Like there is nobody more badass than him in this world. Sort of thing.
Is that the dog? And he's like, what, the dog I got 2 days ago?
Yeah,
exactly. So like you introduce the character that is like the more notorious, the more legendary dude than
him.
I think that would have been, I
get where you're coming from, and yeah. I can see what you're saying. I think that would have been an obvious play, and I like the fact that they brought up somebody who was a fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
You run the risk of doing the Boondock Saints 2 with the dad.
Oh, yeah, God.
You know what I mean? Where the dad is, oh, I've been doing this for years, and I've been killing people and all this, and it doesn't make any sense because... They weren't assassins, they were just dudes who got fed up. And so it didn't make any sense to have this older dad who would like had been in this game for so long, right?
Yeah.
And so you run the risk of it almost jumps the shark, you know, like you're stepping it up. And I like the fact they brought in somebody who was like, dude, I'm a huge fan of you.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're so fucking awesome. And that was really a smart kind of clever play on this, and I didn't see it coming.
Grootz, I completely 100% understand what you are saying.
Yeah,
but I think that you are honestly letting your love of kung fu movies really get in the way of John. I mean, I'm just being real, dude. I'm being real with you.
No.
Think about that. That is like a traditional badass kung fu storyline, right? Think about that. John Wick. It did set itself up to kind of have that play with guns, but it is not. It was never set up to be that kind of movie either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In a sense, like, I feel like the villain from this one, like, or not the villain, but the adversary.
Like Common from 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, there was, yeah, Common from 2, he wasn't overwhelming. You know, like, he had a good story, mm-hmm. but, like, it was kind of...
Yeah.
You know, at the end, it was, like, less than stellar.
I'm mad they didn't bring him back for 3.
I would have liked to see
although he's probably in the hospital still because this is within a week.
He couldn't remove the fucking sword.
But
so, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought he was really good. Talking about other people, we've already talked about Halle Berry and how great she was.
Oh, she was fantastic.
She was a fantastic bring in to this film.
I like they even just briefly referenced her daughter. They didn't get super into it. It was this like,
but that's
what I love about this.
Every film
that
right?
They don't overexplain, so it feels bigger.
Exactly. They could go back to it.
It feels bigger than the little snippet that we're getting in these films. I love that.
How did you guys feel about the head of the table?
Unnecessary.
That was my other thing. Yeah. I thought he was unnecessary. I thought he was a little bit cartoony.
He was.
A little bit too Arabian Nights.
It's like I'm watching Aladdin or some shit.
It was a little bit too over the top. You know, I'm in the desert and, you know, my friend. And it was a little bit too much. And I thought it took away from the story. And John makes this, like, life-changing decision. You know, cuts off his finger, gives him the ring.
Yeah.
Does all this stuff. I'm going to do this. And then, like, 15 minutes later, goes back into the city and is like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be a pawn. Yeah.
Wait a minute. What? Really? You just gave that all up? And I think that aspect of the story arc fell a little flat for me. And that was my other
disappointment. You could have had that plot device much easier where the table has spoken and the only way back in is one of their minions being like, the one way that you can redeem yourself is by killing
dude. The dog. He could have said all that.
Yeah.
You know, and they could have had that conversation there, and then he could have gone back, and that had been the end of it, and they didn't need the desert scene. I thought it was superfluous and not necessary.
I agree.
I do think that was, in a sense, kind of like underwhelming, because I was expecting something more grandiose. Mm-hmm. Like if it's going to be the guy above the high table, it was going to be crazy.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
But, yeah, it was just kind of lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
What I think they were trying to do is kind of express that this isn't very ancient organization, that it's been around for a long time, that this is maybe where the origins are from, this area of the world. And I got notes of that, but I feel like there were other... You could have done multiple notes of that throughout the film in other parts.
Yes.
And it completely cut out that scene. I felt it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
But I don't think it clearly didn't ruin the movie for me.
No, not at all. Not at all.
It was just
like
a weird turn.
Nitpicky thing.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
That's what I said at the beginning. It's nitpicky things.
Yeah.
I do want to end on one of my favorite moments. There wasn't really a straight up car chase scene in this movie, but there was the motorcycle chase that was badass as shit.
Yes.
Was fantastic. And I did not see Arch, I think is the name of Keanu Reeves' motorcycle.
No, they did not use his Arch motorcycle.
Okay.
I was looking for that.
Okay.
To see the Arch motorcycles used, and they did not use
them. I wouldn't have been mad if they did.
No, it'd been cool.
Yeah, it would have been fine.
Brand repping, yo.
Well, I mean...
He's like, no, my bikes are $150,000. No, you can't wreck them. you get fucking Ducatis for that. You don't fuck with my bike.
Which are still, like, very expensive bikes.
I would say the horse riding scene is no slouch either.
Absolutely.
When it comes to, like, just an action set piece.
Yep.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Overall, the animals in this film, the training and the way they handled them,
absolutely.
Way that they did everything with them, I was so impressed.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I've loved that across all three of these movies, that we got his puppy in the first movie, we get dog in the second movie, and now we get the trained German shepherds in the third movie, and I like that. And dog was in it, but he wasn't centric, you know what I mean? And so I liked the fact that we get these, this is a very, you know, this is for dog owners, you know, and I have, with my two dogs and all of that,
we just take a moment for puppy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He poor puppy. He bloodily crawled his way back to John to die.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
Just rewatching that on Friday, I fucking teared up.
It's still upsetting.
Damn it, man. I forgot how much that fucked me up. Yep. Like,
I also like that they never named dog.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I like that they didn't, they're like,
he's
well, you're going to be,
dog.
Yeah, he's still, I really like they didn't just come up with a, like, well, we're going to call you this now. No, they just left it as, I like that.
There's a reason why the first movie is so visceral and resonates so hard with everybody who watches it, is because they killed his motherfucking puppy and they stole his car. His car is an afterthought.
The fucking puppy.
The puppy.
The puppy.
But that's dude. Two things you don't fuck with.
It's two things Seriously. That created an entire genre of music called country music. Like,
if they'd have stolen his pickup truck, it would have been.
They stole his car. Like, his wife dies. They stole his car and they killed his dog. That's a fucking country
and
song.
Only was,
this is a martial arts and gunplay country song.
You don't,
all
you don't
the revenge
light.
Is yeah. appropriate.
You don't fuck with somebody's like dog or pet in general, but let alone the pet that your wife sent you because she knew she was dying from a disease. As her last gift, like,
how has David Allan Coe not written this song yet?
The Ballad of John Wick.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yes. Oh,
which, by the way, is that's the name of the episode?
Yes, the Ballad of John Wick. That's perfect. That's fucking perfect. I was gonna say that's what
that's
one thing. One thing that the horse death reminded me of, the horse deaths, was the scene in Ballad of Buster Scruggs where they used the table.
Yes.
With
Clancy.
That shit was hilarious. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Definitely, you know, tell us what you thought about John Wick. Join the conversation on GYPodcast.com. Hit our email at geeksundertheinfluence@gmail.com, our hotline at 804-505-4484. That's 804-505-4GUI. Hit us up on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Talk with us about what you liked or didn't like about the newest movie, Parabellum, and what you think is going to be happening moving forward.
And before we stop, how cool was it that they
Ian McShane.
Yeah, Ian McShane goes and explains the name of the movie in the middle of the movie.
Just right. in a saying.
Just in a saying.
In Latin.
And,
in fucking
and
Latin.
It was so well done.
Yeah.
God, and Ian McShane is...
The man.
God, he's brilliant. I'll basically
Sorry,
watch anything
I don't mean
he's
to,
in.
I know we're wrapping up.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
We got to go. We're going to continue this conversation next week on an episode of GUI Nights. So join Lowdown and some of us to talk about, whatever tangential came from this episode. And we'll see you for another episode. We're going to be also trying to do a Game of Thrones episode to finish out the entire series that will be dropping probably the same time as our GUI Nights episode drops. So stick around for that. There's going to be a lot of feelings had on that episode.
Yeah.
For sure. And also remember GalaxyCon, May 31st through June 2nd, GalaxyCon. We've got Smack My Pitch Up, Geeks Under the Influence, Beautiful Disasters, and Geek Father all doing live recorded panels. So come. We're going to have some Q&A stuff as well, so you can actually be on an episode of one of your favorite podcasts just by asking a question, and you'll be on the episode. It'll be great. So
it's going to be awesome.
I'm super excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. So thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on another episode of Geeks Under the Influence. I am Mike the Hobbit, and join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit.
Join us or die. Join us or die. Or I will swallow your soul. Necronomicon gives us power to rise from the dead. You play to take. Our play begins to spread. You can fight all you want, because you fail to resist. We're here to take the world and rule with an iron fist. So join us or die.
GUIPodcast.com